Welcome to Energy in Action. I'm your host, Marcy Young, and as a Mito patient myself, I appreciate you and the community you've helped us to build. This podcast honors the triumphs and struggles of patients and families affected by this disease and celebrates the work being done by doctors and researchers every day to make it a safer world for our people. We are a support group and a podcast focusing on all things related to mitochondrial disease. Welcome to another episode of Energy in Action. Today, I am joined by Ira and Leo. And before we give each of them a time to introduce themselves and tell us why they're here and how they're connected, I want to give a little history on my side of this. I want to tell our audience that Leo and Ira really don't know each other. They've never met, but Leo's wife, Rachel, is my Mito friend. And she and I have a friendship that doesn't mirror any of my other friendships. We have this deep connection. We are truly in this together. We've connected because both of us have mitochondrial disease and actually have the same type of mitochondrial disease. We met just a few years ago. I feel like I've known her my whole life. I've heard a lot about Leo, spoken to him a few times. I've met Leo, but my husband hasn't met Leo. And so the other guy on this podcast is Ira, and Ira is my husband. We have been married 17 years, and I am having him on the podcast today for the very first time. So both of them are very special in my life. And, you know, if it weren't for this condition, we probably wouldn't have connected with Leo and Rachel. And their connection to us means so much. I truly think we're going to be friends till the very end. We've talked about having our husbands featured on this podcast for years, and I'm so glad we're finally doing it. There's so much to unpack for the partner of someone with mitochondrial disease or any rare disease, really. So sometimes we really empathize that they've pulled kind of the short stick with their co-parent. Other times we question if they're grumpy or if it's just because of us. Should they have more compassion? And like most issues with mitochondrial disease, it just kind of sends our minds swinging back and forth every single day. So without further ado, I want to introduce Leo and Ira to our Mito Action community. And I will have Leo go first and kind of talk about his, you know, meeting with Rachel and the connection and just give a brief overview, and then we'll kind of get into the rest, and then we'll have Ira introduce himself as well.
Okay. Well, thank you, Marcy, so much for having me. This is such a special opportunity to talk about our lives and talk about this aspect of our lives that I don't think we really get to fully share with a lot of people, because it's such a difficult thing to talk about and a difficult thing for people to understand, because it's a not well understood disease and disability. But just about myself, obviously, my name is Leo. I'm a dad. I'm a father of two girls under the ages of 7. I met Rachel many, many, many years ago. I went to high school with a friend, and this friend met Rachel's sister in college. And sometime during their college years, we all went to a New Year's party at a karaoke place. And I met Rachel. Maybe I was like 22 or 23. I don't remember. Nothing came of it. She's 4 or 5 years older than I am. And a few years later, we both moved to New York, to the same city, for graduate school. And we decided to get coffee. And that became our first date. And that was in 2013. And 12 years later, we're here. We got married in 2016. So it's been 9 years since we've been married. It'll be 9 years. We've moved a bunch of times together. We've changed jobs. We've graduated from our programs. We bought a house. We sold a house. You know, we've done all the things that, you know, a typical couple does together. And now we're raising our daughters in the city, which is its own set of challenges. We both have, you know, professional jobs, that can be demanding, but that, you know, we're also lucky to have, because they give us flexibility to work around all the challenges that we have. Our lives look very normal, I think, from the outside. And we've been lucky that Rachel's condition hasn't been very progressive so far, but it's still a thing that we live with day to day, you know, and can present its challenges. And I know I've always known about it. Part of it was that my brother-in-law, you know, my high school friend who became my brother-in-law, told me that at some point, you know, in a conversation that way before I dated Rachel, that his wife and his wife's family, which my Rachel's sister, there was something that they grappled with, you know, that Rachel had her challenges in life, required assistance, you know, felt insecure, or, you know, like she wasn't strong enough, you know, physically or even emotionally to do certain things, and that the whole family sort of could sometimes get involved in supporting her, and that, you know, as part of the family dynamic. So I knew about it, but when we started dating, Rachel didn't know that I knew. You know, it was not something that had come up until I think our third date, she decided to tell me. Actually, it was late August or early September, and she had a day off from work, and we decided to go to the beach, to Coney Island, a very iconic beach in New York, you know, our amusement park behind us and everything, Nathan's hot dog. And she said, you know, I have something to tell you. You know, I don't know if this is going to affect our relationship or not. And I knew what she was going to say, but I just let her say her whole thing. And I just said, I actually know your brother-in-law told me. By this time, her brother-in-law and her sister were married already. We'd actually seen each other at the wedding. That was like a couple of years before dating. And she said, oh, wow, I can't believe that you never brought it up. That was not a topic of a conversation. So clearly she was very self-conscious and worried that, you know, this was going to be a deal breaker, you know, knowing that she had this condition and that it was something we're going to have to face together her whole lives. But, you know, honestly, I just didn't think about it at all. I just said, well, everybody comes with something, you know, like, what can you do? And I have a good connection to this person. You know, truthfully, of course, you know, I was a little young and naive, and I, you know, with everything, you don't know how it's all going to play out and how your life is going to be different in some ways and how each disability or condition affects someone's life. So that's been a learning process, but I don't think anyone could have taught me or told me that, even Rachel herself, because I think, you know, even through her 20s and 30s, it's been a process of discovery of what works for her and for us together in our lives, just in terms of routines and abilities, you know, who, and the division of labor, you know, who can do what in our house and just in our lives and just career wise too, you know, what's sustainable and what's not sustainable. You know, all of that just kind of has to be through the process of experimentation.
Leo, I think you shared so beautifully. I think you explained it in the most perfect way. I really appreciate you being here and telling your story. It was a really great start to this episode. I wrote no pressure.
No, none at all. None at all. None at all. All right. Well, Marcy and I met in college. Coincidentally, we were both from Cleveland, but didn't know each other. So this was before, you know, rare disease or mitochondria or any of that really was in her life. So, you know, we dated, we moved back home, we got married in 08. And kind of from there, it was more focused on Marcy's mom, who had some issues that I knew about, didn't really think a ton of it at the time, thought it was muscular dystrophy, which was an incorrect diagnosis. But again, that's a whole nother story. So we kind of went through all this together and, you know, had insurance, got testing, all the important stuff. Marcy wanted to know what was going on with her, you know, so we really kind of went through this whole exploration into her rare disease together. And, you know, it was tough, I guess, but I didn't really think about it like that back then. It was just, okay, this is what we're doing. You know, this is what's going on. You know, I knew her grandmother died young. I knew her mom died young. You know, as this all, in retrospect, I didn't know at the time. And, you know, as this diagnosis went on and Marcy talked to more of her family and this all expanded and this whole, you know, picture came into view, it's like, okay, this is a thing that's going to be here for forever. But we were in it together. And again, at the time, I don't know that I, you know, as Leo said, I was young, I was probably immature to this, but it's like, yeah, this will be fine. It's a thing. We'll just deal with it, whatever. And, you know, looking back at it now, married for 17 years, you know, together before that, it's like, okay, I have a little bit of a different perspective now as, you know, we have two kids and, you know, dealing with a lot more complexities of life now than when we were, you know, in our 20s and dating.
You both said the term, we were in this together, or some variation on that. And I got really emotional hearing both of you say that because, you know, as someone who is going through this, hearing something like that is really powerful, to know that that love is unconditional. And I'm sure that Rachel would say the same. And you both said it within the thread of your story. And I think that's really powerful. And I think Rachel and I are both very lucky to have you both. But on the flip side, I'm sure that there are some frustrating aspects to being married to someone or being partnered with someone with mitochondrial disease. You know, this is a no holding back conversation, but it should be a therapeutic experience for you, create some understanding for us and for everyone out there. So what's the most frustrating part of all of this today, not back when we were in our 20s?
And none of this will be held against me? I'm kidding.
No.
I'm kidding. I think the biggest thing right now in our life, we're both over in our 40s. It's events. It's a lot of our life right now is centered around kids' activities and things like that. And I always really give a big thought to, okay, is there going to be somewhere for Marcy to sit? And it's a pretty simple thing. You know, okay, are there going to be chairs there? But that's a really big part of what's going on with her is, you know, standing's hard, walking's okay, but, you know, standing's really tough. So it's like, okay, if we're going to a basketball game, we need to bring bleacher seats. If we're going to, you know, a volleyball game, we need bleacher seats. If we're going to something outside, you know, we need to bring a bleacher seat and a folding chair, just to make sure that whatever the scenario is when we show up sometimes at these random schools and fields, you know, that Marcy can handle that. You know, when we are looking at events, both professionally, personally, you know, is there going to be a cocktail hour? Is there going to be somewhere to sit during that? You know, are there options available? So that's a big thing that we discuss a lot of the time, and at least what I think about a lot, you know, and I think about that and just how can I help out more? You know, I want to be an involved dad, a father, you know, I want to be an involved husband, but it's like, okay, what's one more thing I could do to maybe make her life just this little bit easier today? Maybe take just like a little pressure off of her today, you know, and it can be as simple as, you know, I'm going to finish cutting up potatoes, which was actually happened last night because she'd been standing and dicing potatoes for dinner and she took a break because she was getting tired, you know, and it's a minor thing. It's a simple thing, but you know, I was home from work. The kids were doing whatever. It's like, yeah, I can do this. I can take over. And I think nothing of it, or I try to think nothing of it. But I'm sure at times it's frustrating and I should probably express those frustrations a little bit more. But, you know, it's also, whether it's this or something else in life, it's our life. This is what we do on the day to day. So we just kind of move forward through it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, too. I don't think of things quite so directly or practically as I probably should, like Ira does, in terms of seating and chairs, though that's a big factor for Rachel too. Or the part of the problem is that she's learned to push through a lot of things, and she just demands so much of herself. And sometimes she just pushes through beyond what she realizes are her limits. You know, part of the having the condition and not having a really precise diagnosis of her disability and the fact that's invisible, you know, there's a certain amount of masking that she does to the world of not letting people know that she has it, and a certain amount to herself, I think, too, trying to trick herself into doing more than she can, and, you know, feeling guilty that she can't, you know, in particular with our kids, you know. So, you know, we have to get them to school. We live in the city, so, you know, busing depends where you live in terms of how convenient it is. So we actually have to drop off our kids, pick them up, you know, and that's a whole, you know, it's like moving a army of people who are throwing tantrums every morning, and it's difficult. And, you know, I wish sometimes when I have a lot going on that she could do it more, you know, and she's definitely stepped up where there are a lot of things that we can both do and share. But, you know, for example, food shopping for her, I think for lots of reasons, is really draining. You know, it's like a lot of planning, a lot of thinking, a lot of, you know, going somewhere, walking through a store, picking it up, putting it in a cart, bringing it back, bringing it upstairs. It's just a lot of wear and tear. And, you know, some of it's just personality wise too, you know, or, you know, abilities as a person. And I just have sort of the executive function to do a quick shopping trip and, you know, not think too much about it, you know. So there's definitely more of the physical labor that falls on me. And I'm sure that's true of Ira too.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. And that, you know, that can get tiring, but over the years, I've just realized, you know, recognized that that's our lives, and that's the name of the game, and it's not going to change. You know, there are lots of things that she is better at. And I think, you know, that's just going to be true of lots of relationships, you know. So it's just like I said before, you know, every relationship, every person comes with their abilities and their things that they're not so good at, you know, and if it weren't these things, it would be other things. So, you know, I can count on Rachel to do lots of things. She's extremely patient with our children. You know, we come from a family on both sides who have a lot of anxiety. So our children are definitely going to be anxious. And, you know,
us too. I relate to that.
Yeah. You know, so like getting out of the door is just like also about the anxiety of going to school and making sure everything is in the bag and, you know, everything is ready. And, you know, when I'm like, I like to be, you know, I don't explicitly live through this saying, but like, to me, if you're on time, you're late. I'm like to be early to places. That's part of my anxiety. I just like to be out and ready. And Rachel, partly because of her condition, is always late. But also, you know, she comes from like a family of nutty professors and academics who are all like in space, you know, and like take 45 minutes to like get to the point about a lot of things. And so she's just naturally like a little takes a zigzag way to things. But I think that's really good for kids. You know, she's very tolerant of, you know, everybody going through their own process and not living by like the tyranny of the clock. You know, I think Ira and I are probably in similar professions where, you know, like we have to think about time and units and efficiency and, you know, savings and all sorts of stuff.
Very much so.
You know,
I sit in the car a lot and wait for everyone else to come out when we're going places. I'm like, all right, I'm done. I can't deal with this anymore. And I walk outside and I sit and I wait.
Yeah. I mean, that's a very mature way of dealing. I mean, maybe Marcy doesn't like it, but if I did that, I would probably get a Nobel Peace Prize or something in our house, because oftentimes I've just blown my gasket and be like, why can't anyone be on time in this house? You know, and like drag everybody out.
As the kids have gotten older and like they're more responsible now, because our kids are a little bit older
yeah.
than Leo and Rachel's. And we have to like kind of let them do their thing. And so it's like, I just can't handle it. I don't want to yell at everybody. So
yeah,
it's worked well for me removing myself from the situation, which might be frustrating for Marcy.
The physical demand of getting them out of the house is much less at our kids' age. So hopefully that'll be a nice reprieve for both of you.
Yeah.
You know, down the road.
It's definitely getting better. And like, we recognize it's getting better. I think the important thing is to realize that like the stakes for us are just different. You know, people living in household with disability, it's just, as long as everybody is relatively healthy in the big picture sense and, you know, safe and, you know, we're on our way to where we need to go. I mean, that's the reframe that I need to work into my mind a lot of the time is, you know, we're going to be okay, you know, and that's, it's okay if we're 10, 15 minutes, 20 minutes late to something in the big picture. It's not going to change anything. You know, we're going to be just fine. You know, it's just my own expectations have to be adjusted, just like Rachel's expectations had to be adjusted with me, because like I'm a big, you know, annoying, weird person in a lot of ways too. Like, you know, it's just not called a disability. It could be called a personality disorder. I don't know. Maybe I just, nobody.
We all have our things.
All have our things. So, you know, I'm just very lucky to be with Rachel. You know, I definitely think that we are, you know, as we say in Judaism, beshurts, you know, like soulmates. And I just cannot imagine another life, you know, for better or worse. You know, there's nothing that would make me change my mind or want to do anything differently, because I really like our life and enjoy it. And our children, you know, like there's no way, I think every parent probably feels this way, or I hope they do. It's just like, once you have your kids and like those are your kids, you can't imagine changing anything about them, you know, or, you know, the way that they came about.
I think that's a good point too. Like, I don't, you know, obviously, you know, the rare disease, the mitochondrial disease, it's in our face every day, but I don't wake up and it's like, oh, I wish my life was different, or, oh, I made the wrong choices, you know, or I shouldn't, you know, be with Marcy because of any of that. Like, that doesn't even cross my mind. I don't know. Maybe it should. Maybe that's not healthy that it doesn't. But, you know, there's things specifically, like I said, that are frustrating and that I can, you know, quote unquote, tolerate or things like that. But in the big picture, I never think like, wow, I did this wrong, because I am happy with my life and with my marriage, and my kids are pretty good most of the time. We're at real fun ages where they say really mean things. I'll say that.
Yeah,
I do think kind of bringing up the kids like that, you know, I think it's really hard for children to understand limitations. You know, I think, you know, Marcy may have these because of, you know, her disability, her disease, and she gets exhausted and it's just done. And, you know, I maybe get to the same place from a different perspective, but, you know, you wake up early, you get the kids out the door, you go to work all day, you come home, you get them activities, you eat dinner, and sometimes I'm just done, you know? So, you know, I'm coming from a different perspective, and maybe it's not physically for me. Maybe it's more mentally or just emotionally. Either way, I'm checked out. So I do think in that respect, I can kind of relate at least, and kind of that removes some of the frustration, because everybody gets exhausted. Again, different path to a similar thing. And, you know, especially now that our son stays up a lot later as he's gotten older, like I've looked at him at 9:30 at night and been like, hey, man, I'm just done. I don't have it in me anymore. I'm not arguing with you about this, whatever it is. Like, I'm just done for the day. You know, you want to sit and hang out? Great. You want to play a game? Great. But I'm not going to sit here and engage you in like this, you know, because he's like super high energy and he'll want to get into an argument about nothing just to be engaged. It's like, and I'm not doing that. Like, I'm done. And again, it's different than maybe physically being done, but again, kind of related in that regard.
I think that's a really huge challenge. The fact that kids are inherently selfish, you know, like they can't empathize, you know, like their brains just haven't developed enough to understand this very complex. I mean, I think, you know, it took me a very long time to understand the condition, you know, partly because it sounds like your guys's path to understanding it was sort of windy and drawn out too through your families. And so was Rachel's, you know, like Rachel, I think, is Marcy knows, and maybe she talked about in her episode, didn't find really have any answers till she was 18 and went to a specialist at Columbia University and had a whole test and, you know, became the subject of a paper. So she didn't really understand. And I think after that, you know, and that was over 20, it was like 25 years ago. So, you know, I think they gave her a set of recommendations that weren't very specific. And then after a while, she just avoided it and didn't think about it, you know, because there wasn't that much to do. There was no Mito action. There wasn't a community of people, you know, there was some obviously shame and frustration with coming to terms with it. And, you know, so it's not like we got together and she told me, and then she said, these are the things that I need, because she didn't really know exactly what she needed. She just knew that I needed to know and go along with her, you know. So that was a long, difficult process of figuring out, you know, what kind of life works for us. And, you know, part of that was like moving to a suburb in DC for part of our careers and realizing that like maintaining a whole house in a city where we actually didn't have any family was a lot more work than we could handle. And then moving back to the New York area where we have family, my parents live nearby, and we live in an apartment. It's one floor, you know, there's a lot less up and down. There's less room so that, you know, there's less to keep up with. All these like tiny changes, I think, make a big difference. And that was just something that we had to figure out over time, you know. And you know, some of the decision making wasn't explicitly around Mito, but, you know, it was things that tied into it, you know, like Rachel is a doctor, so she was working in a clinical job, you know, and part of moving back here was working at a non-clinical job where she could use her skills, you know, which meant sitting in an office and having a more flexible schedule, you know, so she's not under her feet, you know. And even at her old job, there were challenges in terms of accommodations, like making sure that things were, she could sit while seeing patients, or she could reach things and have a room that was accessible to her, you know. Aside from having Mito, she's quite short, which is a whole other thing. But our kids won the genetic lottery, you know. I'm also not tall. So, you know, but yeah, back to my earlier point, the kids, and what Ira was saying is the kids are, you know, they just don't understand this very complex set of constraints. They're very little, you know. To be honest, I don't know what Rachel has said explicitly. I think nothing mostly, but they know that mommy is more tired, more difficult to get up in the morning, can't run, you know. They don't ever ask her to chase them, you know, through the playground or on the way to school. They know that she can't run. They know that she can't pick them up, carry them. Surprisingly, if they get on a stool or on the bed, she can lift them and hold them for like a little bit, but, you know, not for very long, and not walk with them. You know, like I can walk 10 city blocks with one of them. I will not enjoy it, and I will curse them, but I can do it, you know, and I have. And, you know, I think that creates certain dynamics, you know, like our almost 4-year-olds will basically always say, "Dada, up, 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 up," you know, meaning like, "Get me up in your arms." And then the 7-year-old, who's perfectly capable of walking, gets very jealous, you know. And then it becomes like a game of taking turns of which, you know, sandbag am I carrying for no reason at all. And I think, and that leads to their dependence on me, I think, for certain things, or they're feeling more comfortable with certain more physical demands and certain, but, you know, I, you know, the relationship with a mother is like really complex and intimate too. So some of it I think is just like naturally going to daddy because, you know, they may feel slightly less secure, you know, and like want to have that connection with me. But like you said, Marcy, you know, we're very open about talking about feelings and saying that we're both available. And I mean, I think generally Rachel deals really well with the fact that they come to me with a lot of demands. I mean, and she's empathizes with me that, you know, in the middle of the night when our 4-year-old wants someone to comfort her, she comes to me. And, you know, Rachel knows that like my sleep is terrible. It's like interrupted every night at least once, you know, and that I sleep more lightly because, you know, usually someone's butt or a leg is in my face.
But I talk to parents who are, you know, more typical in terms of their health profiles, and it's the same doo-doo, not to use a four-letter word. So I think it's just degrees of stuff, and like every family is different. You know, I think the most important thing in life, acceptance and gratitude, because, you know, there's always problems. It's just like everything is problems. And my life motto is nothing is easy. No matter what you're doing, it's not going to be easy, because it's just life is inherently challenging. And I'm not saying it's a negative thing. It's just saying things
take just time. Is.
It just is, you know, it's like the nature of the beast. And, you know, I'm just very grateful that we have what we have, just in terms of, you know, healthcare and housing and, you know, decent family support and relationships and friends and to get us through everything that we need to get through. But, you know, day to day, I'm just like, oh, how am I going to make it through the next day? But I think so many people feel that way, you know.
Yeah,
I think that's what connects us all, you know, and leads to empathy, I hope, you know.
Hopefully. Ira, do you feel like the kids lean on you a lot more for physical?
Yeah, I think they probably do lean on me more for physical needs. They certainly lean on you more for emotional needs, which is fine with me. Personality wise, I think that's probably better. But if they need something physical, that they're probably coming to me. And if you're the only one home, I think a lot of times they probably wait too.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to overwhelm you. You know, they know that you get tired and that you're not lifting anything heavy or things like that. You know, part of it too is just I'm probably more mechanically inclined than you are. You know, just.
I think that has to do with the disease, though.
It might. Who knows?
My balance is off. My coordination's off. My dexterity's off. So opening packages and putting things together and.
A shoe rack tonight. Reese asked me to help her put together a shoe rack.
Our 9-year-old daughter needs her own shoe rack.
You can cut that out.
We have a big problem.
But you know, Leo, you said something really interesting regarding almost maintaining a home, you know, whereas you guys, you said that living in an apartment's a little bit easier. I do think about that sometimes. I think about it more in relation to when we're older and the kids are out of the house and we're downsizing and how having, you know, we live in the suburbs. So, you know, it's space is a little cheaper than in New York City, shockingly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I do think that like, hey, when we're older, we need a ranch. We need something smaller that'll be easier for us to maintain. That'll be easier for Marcy. So I guess I do think about those things, but yeah, I'm a planner. I like to think ahead. It's just the nature of who I am. So that resonated with me.
It's also economical.
Yes, it's economical too. But I just, you know, again, I just thought about that, you know, and as you said it.
Well, I think you both are being very raw with your feelings, and I appreciate it. I know Ira isn't always one to do that, but I think in this capacity, it's a good place to do it. And I think that your stories could be really impactful for those listening. So let's keep going. Do either of you talk about the fact that your wife has a rare disease with any friends or family?
Yes, I'll say probably not a ton. I think the point of where we're at in life right now, you're able to do most of what we do as a family, you know, as we interact with our friends and everything else. So I don't think it comes up as much in that regard, but I've certainly discussed it before, you know, probably more with my family than with my friends, just because they kind of know what's going on. And, you know, it's not that I'm hiding it from people, but we don't always discuss it a ton. So I don't know. I guess maybe a little bit. I don't know how to answer that.
Do you think that's difficult, that it's building inside of you, and that do you wish it was more of an open conversation?
No, because I think that when we're doing stuff, I don't really want that to be the focus, you know, just like any issue that somebody has, I wouldn't want that to be the focus. You know, if someone's disabled in a physical way, like, you don't want to talk about that. You don't want to focus on that. When you're out and about and doing things, interacting with people, you know, you want to enjoy it and have a good time. So I think we try and, you know, or I try and not talk about that a ton. You know, when we're with maybe my family, if we're on a vacation or doing something different, I think it comes up more because I'm thinking ahead of, like, you know, again, I want to make sure it's a good scenario for you to be in, to make sure that you have this or that. Or, you know, if we're out and about and I'm like, hey, Marcy, you've been standing for like a really long time, you should go and sit. You'll be like, I'm fine. I'm like, eh, you should really go and sit. You know, it's things like that, probably more when we're with people.
I think that the disease can be hidden behind what most people in our lives know, is that I have a very poor, really chronic back pain and a really weak back. So most people in our lives know that, but I don't think a lot of people in our lives know exactly where it stems from.
Yeah, I think most of my close friends know that Rachel has some sort of condition. They might not be able to name it or remember what I said. You know, it's not like something you discuss in detail at all with anyone. Probably just my family knows more because, you know, during the pandemic, we lived with them for a couple months so they could help with the children, you know, so, you know, adapting to their house, you know, was a big challenge because they live in the suburbs and it's a big house, or much bigger than our space, you know, so that was difficult. But I think they've come around to really understanding that Rachel has limits, and that, you know, like I think Ira said, you know, for us too, it's just like, there was a time where I thought, you know, we can just go out and be out all day and do things and whatever, which is, I'm also just compulsively like to, if I, you know, if I have a plan, I'm happy to just like go out and just be out all day and enjoy the day and do something. I don't like to feel cabin fever, like being in the house all day, particularly with the kids. Like they, you know, they spin around, and I'm sure they've experienced it sometimes. Like they get bored, and they, you know, if they watch too much TV, they get grumpy and, you know, start eating sweets and whatever. So I like to do things and get them out of the house. And if I were up to me, they get, you know how they are. They, you know, they'll sleep in when they have school. And then when it's the weekend, they'll get up at 6 and be like, I'm ready to go. What do you got for me? And I'm, you know, if it were up to me, I would take them out at 6:30, 7 o'clock and be like, all right, we're going to go get breakfast, and then we're going to go to the museum, and then we're going to get lunch, and then we're going to go to the bookstore and then the playground, and then we're going to come home, and you're going to take a bath, and you're going to sleep. And obviously that does not work in our family. It will never work. You know, on a weekend, on a good weekend, Rachel's up by like, you know, 10 o'clock, you know, she really needs to recharge after the week. You know, it's taken me a lot of patience and acceptance to just let Saturdays and Sundays be slow when they need to be slow. I mean, Sunday's a little different because our kids, or at least our older kid, goes to Hebrew school. So, you know, it's more like a regular day in some ways. But Saturday, things just start slower. I've accepted that some days even our kids need a day at home. You know, they've been at school all week, you know, and sometimes they want to just what do the kids say these days? Not my kids, but older kids, like rot
you know, I don't know, or I think that's what they say.
I don't know. I was told we're not allowed to say they're having play dates anymore with friends. They're having like, they're going to hang out.
Oh, hang out. Yeah.
Yeah.
But my kids want to vegetate. Yeah. They just want to like, you know, and they do like very wholesome things at home. They just don't want to be overstimulated too. And, you know, I think that's part of the challenge too. And maybe this is getting ahead of ourselves, but like watching our kids for signs of things. I don't know. You know, we never know. Exactly. I mean, surprisingly or not, because neither of us is athletic, like our older child loves to run, loves to really show off that she can do certain things physically. And our younger child is just like a MacGyver. She'll just like try to climb a bookcase and jump, you know, onto a coffee table, or, you know, she's going to like be like a little Hulk Hogan, you know, Jewish Hulk Hogan or something, you know. I don't know. So, you know, but, you know, there are times where they're very tired or, you know, very anxious that make us think that, you know, what's going on? You know, are they finding some limit or being frustrated by something that could be related in some way to a genetic mutation, you know, but we've chosen not to get them tested yet. It's, you know, we haven't seen, you know, acute signs of anything to worry about. But yeah, just in general, I've had to slow down a lot, you know, for Rachel, which is actually a really, really good thing for me, because I go too fast. I'm really anxious about getting things done. You know, that comes from my own set of anxieties and, you know, background, I think, in just in terms of, I moved a lot as a kid and lived in new environments. My parents were also, me and Rachel have that in common. Our parents were, you know, in higher education. And so I moved a lot. And I think I learned some self-sufficiency because I moved to new places and had to adapt to new places. And my parents were working different schedules and had to teach in the afternoon or the evening. And so I just like to get things done, you know, and sometimes it's not a priority to get things done. Sometimes the priority is to rest and recharge. And that's really important too.
Yeah, I have a hard time with that as well. I like to get things done, get things knocked off the list, be doing stuff. But, you know, Marcy also similarly needs to get a lot more sleep than me and a lot more resting than I need. And again, we assume that's because of the rare disease, because of the mitochondrial disease. That makes sense. Am I just a person that gets up earlier? Probably, but you know, that's how it is. So I often will deal with the kids in the mornings, on the weekends, especially, you know, early, and let Marcy sleep, and it's fine. I'm up anyway, so it doesn't really matter to me. But, you know, and I think the kids know that, you know, mommy needs to sleep in, you know, and it just is. So, you know, they'll want to make breakfast or they'll want to do something fun like that. And it's like, guys, let's push this back just a little bit. Let's give her that extra half hour, that extra hour. And they're normally okay with it.
Do either of you or both of you, do you think about losing your wife prematurely?
It pops into my head every once in a while. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, we've been lucky so far that the doctors that she sees have not said that it's progressive so far, you know, but I think the really challenging part about the disease is just how individualized the symptoms are and how little information there is. But like we've said before, a lot of that is the uncertainty that comes with everything. You know, you can think that you have no major diseases or anything. And this has been happening tragically, unfortunately for us, among our friends, like learning about someone who in their early 40s has cancer, you know, and a bad prognosis, and like they didn't have a chronic disease, you know, or someone has a heart attack, you know. So, you know, in some ways it's like better to have the devil, you know, and deal with it and be able to keep an eye on it. But I do think about once in a while, like, how soon could it be? You know, I just really, 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 really hope it's not before, you know, the kids really grow up. You know, I hope that they become adults and have their mom until adulthood. You know, we have reason to think otherwise, but you know, you never know.
Yeah. So that's interesting, because that's when the kids were younger. It's like, and maybe this is just me being selfish, but it was like, you know, Marcy needs to be around until they've matured, you know, when they really need their mom when they're little. And now it's like, as they've gotten a little bit older and they're in this like tween teenage, it's like, okay, so, you know, Marcy's mom passed away around 60. So, you know, we've got it, in my mind, it's like, okay, well, that's another long chunk of years from now. The kids will be adults. So, okay. But again, like you said, I try not to think about that, or don't really think about, you know, premature death, because I don't think it's like, okay, I don't have a mitochondrial disease, so I'm going to live to be 150. Like, I don't think about that. I think about, as you said, especially as we've gotten older and you start seeing a lot more loss and a lot more issues arise, that's going to be what it's going to be. We can't really control it, whether you have a rare disease or whether you don't. And I don't know. Again, a lot of it is regarding the kids, and it's like, okay, we've gotten past this stage of development and everything was okay. You know, we made it. That's great. You know, what's this next stage of development going to be? Okay, we've gotten through that. Like that's, a lot of it has to do with them more than me.
I'll just jump in with like a random thought that I had too, that I think has come up, or, you know, from time to time. I haven't thought about this for a while, but I think Rachel worries a lot about what is normal and what is not normal. You know, she's like, do I look normal? Because if the her eyes, you know, do I seem like, you know, really tired? Can people tell? You know, and you know, what's a normal person able to do on a typical day? And sometimes death pushes her to do completely abnormal things, you know, way beyond what like a typical person within their typical limits would do. Like, she has this hyper focus that I'm jealous of. I do not have, where she can work on her job like for 10 hours straight, you know, like be in meetings and then just go from a meeting to writing a paper to analyzing numbers, and will just not stop to eat. And I say, like, are you crazy? Like, you can't do that. I mean, particularly because of her condition, but like a normal person would, you know, working in themselves that way is going to collapse, or, you know, just like feel really cranky and grumpy. And she thinks like that's what you should be able to do, you know, because she sets the bar so high and thinks that's normal, you know. And I think her not knowing what normal is and wanting to be normal. And I keep trying to remind her that there really is no normal. You know, we just all have these needs and we have to stop and take care of them, and, you know, shouldn't have to worry so much what normal or not normal is.
It's tough these days, though, especially with everything that gets, you know, pushed out on, you know, social media, the internet, news, everything.
Right. Everyone's like doing everything all the time. Yeah. And everyone's hobby has become a side hustle or a profession or something. I don't know. It's like a lot of people are just hyperactive for whatever reason. Yeah.
Or they present it as such, which I think is too. Yeah, but
I think that's right.
Yeah. You know, I think Marcy worries about a lot of these things probably a lot more than I do, because obviously it affects you personally. But like, I think you think about dying prematurely a lot more than I do think about you, you know, and that's sad. It just, I don't know if there's anything else to be said about that. But I mean, I think you push yourself too hard, you know, like Leo was saying too. I think when you're feeling good, you want to push it especially hard, which, you know, can then lead to a setback. And it's kind of going back and forth.
Mm-hmm. So let's just say I could wave some crazy magic wand and Rachel and I don't have this condition. Like, what's the most exciting part of that for both of you, for each of you?
I don't know. I think the biggest thing for me would be, I think you would be happier and calmer and less, you worry a lot. So I think taking away that worry would be really nice. I mean, and we've not had our kids tested. So I think just knowing that there's zero chance would be better than knowing that there's a chance, you know, that they have this, and not really thinking about so much like, you know, where's, you know, science and medicine going as far as, you know, correcting issues on the genome and all these different things that are, you know, crazy and didn't exist in when we were born. So maybe just not having to think about all that stuff all the time would be nice.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Ira. I hadn't thought about that. The thought, I mean, yeah, the main thing would be my wife being happier, feeling whole, like she's not deficient in some way. I think she feels like she's lacking something. I think just as a family, it would be fun to be outdoors more. You know, I used to like in my younger years, hiking, not like extreme hiking, but like, you know, moderate few miles hike, you know, very light camping. But that's also personality wise. Like my wife says that she like she'll only go as far outdoors as a patio to drink wine, you know, like, so like, it, even if she was like completely able-bodied, I'm not sure I could get her to go hiking.
Yeah, I don't think Marcy would be sleeping in a tent no matter what.
Yeah. So it might not change anything. So that's why I don't feel like I'm lacking in much because, you know, I already made my bed and I'm lying in it. But yeah, I mean, just, but having the option of doing certain things, you know, planning, knowing that we could plan to do certain things that take a little more energy. But yeah, I think the level of, I think Ira mentioned something helpful too, is just like the level of worry is really high, you know, and I think that can cloud, you know, a lot of stuff, you know, like we could just live at probably like a lower level of anxiety if we didn't have it, you know, that would be good for her.
I certainly worry about Marcy in relation to her disease a lot. It's on the mind when we're out doing stuff. And again, you're worried about it. I'm worried about it. I'm sure in whatever capacity the kids understand, they have some worry about it. So it would just be nice if that was all lifted. I think that'd be the biggest thing.
You've both done incredible today. Thank you so much for sharing. I appreciate both of you being in my lives, obviously very different ways, but the connection with Leo and Rachel is just so important to me. And obviously I feel beyond blessed to have my husband in my life, and he is the best thing that's ever happened to me. And I'm so glad that our audience can meet him. And I'm sure Rachel would say the exact same about Leo. And I thank you so much for sharing with us and getting real about your feelings. And I know that in a big way, we, you know, Rachel and I talk about our feelings about this and how it impacts us, but it impacts the two of you as well. And it's important for you each to have time to think about that and to talk about that and to be raw about it. And you were today. And I hope that you're both able to do that with each of your wives, you know, moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, thank you, Marcy, for doing everything you do with Mito Action and with your podcast. I mean, I can't thank you enough. I mean, my gratitude goes really, really deeply to you, because before Rachel was connected to Mito Action, she really didn't have anyone who she really felt truly understood her and what she was going through, except maybe her parents, who've been hurt with her whole life and have been very understanding and helpful. But I think she felt real loneliness, and that it was frustrating to take me through the process of learning this, because I didn't have experience with disability. And meeting you and becoming close friends, I think has completely changed her world. You know, it's been completely transformative. And it's just made her life so, 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 so much better. And she's always excited to talk to you, to talk to the Mito Action support groups, you know, and like, that's something that I always make time for and take the kids out. I think it's just really important to have this community of support. So I'm just feel blessed, you know, to be a small part of that, and, you know, look forward to seeing you guys in person and meeting Ira in person.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, I'll kind of echo that too. Again, this is me selfishly. I'm happy that you have people to talk to and to connect with that maybe understand what's going on from a different perspective. You know, obviously I've seen, you know, how this has played out over the last, you know, whatever, 20 years, but it's not the same thing. So some of that venting and stress kind of gets removed from me again, selfishly, and gets,
and you puts know, put on in, Rachel.
Yeah. And the community and it, yeah. But I think that's really healthy and that does make me really happy. And I know that, you know, doing this podcast is really good for you and you really enjoy it and, you know, putting it out there for people. It's really nice.
Thank you both. It was so nice to chat with you both this morning.
Leo, we'll get together in person and we can just sit around and be anxious. It'll be great.
Or do things. Yeah. Get built. We can just get, we can just,
I'll
we
sit. Can just, we'll be sedentary.
We'll get a flat pack of furniture and just like build it for.
Yeah. It's a giggle. There you go. Just keep doing something.
Yeah. I hope you guys had a good cruise and that you guys have a good Passover.
It was good.
You too.
Yeah, Tim, you hope you have a good Passover.
And
again, we'll talk soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, we will.
Well, thank you both for being here.
Thank you for joining us. I encourage you to browse other Energy in Action podcast episodes. I am so inspired by the resilience of those in previous episodes, and I know you will be too.